Very interesting, Glenn. Right, the speaking queue is now open for questions, and we've got one up already, and it's from Jordan. Okay, Jordan, it's all yours.
What up, man? Yeah, great talk. Seriously, you came in from a lot of angles. I didn't expect you to come in from that many angles, so I wasn't prepared. I mean, I kind of thought there was a couple of those. You know, when I read the description, I knew you were going to touch on a couple of those. So I kind of came up with like a few in my head that I could. A few things I could say, but yeah, good shit. But anyway, I definitely feel like the biggest thing is for sure Lennon. I think he screwed it up for everybody by just like saying that, you know, he built socialism or whatever. I mean, he kind of sort of didn't say that, but like, you know, like kind of implying that or whatever. He kind of ruined that. That's like the biggest thing that kind of like just allowed America and other countries to have a bludgeon like forever against it. But I mean, I think definitely. Even bigger than that is just the idea. I mean, you touched on the whole normalcy thing, you know, like I feel like people are kind of just lulled into this sleep of thinking that there can't be any better, you know, and then, yeah, even when they even start to think that maybe there might be something that could possibly be better, you know, they bring out that bludgeon of socialism's killed 100 million people or whatever, which is ridiculous. But yeah, like, I just think that the biggest thing in a way is, you know, obviously claims to socialism in the past and just, I guess, just propaganda, like pretty much. Yeah, it sucks.
Jordan, thanks a lot for that. I mentioned the far more intellectually minded members of the Socialist Party than me. I you make some really, really good points there. Thank you for that. I think in terms of Lenin and his influence on the whole process, I'd almost certainly hand over some of the other members who can talk far more in a far more erudite way on Lenin than I could. I'm sure Howard or Adam or indeed any of them probably. But thank you, Jordan, for that. Thanks.
Moggy?
Hello. Right, well, just a couple of thoughts. I find when I'm talking to people about socialism, the thing is they can't imagine it happening quickly. They agree with me. They say, oh, yes, it'll be a very good idea. Things would be better. But they can't imagine it happening quickly. And they want something to change now. And I think people get very seduced by political parties offering reforms. Like one bunch of clowns will get up and say, we're going to improve the health system. Well, where are they going to get the money from? They have to take it from education. And the other bunch of clowns will get up and say, we're going to improve the education system. Well, where do they get the money for that? They have to take it from health and so on. So I think people get very seduced by being offered these reforms. And they say, oh, well, we'll try voting for this party because they're promising us this, that, and the other. So I think that's one of the problems. They can't see anything happening quickly. And then, just the other thing is, I'm just nitpicking now, but rhinos don't have tusks. Rhinos have horns. Tusks are teeth, and they're made of ivory.
Paul Edwards, whereas horns said that explains
are
a lot.
Made of compressed hair. And they are very valuable to, well, people in China because they use them for, they grind it up and use it as aphrodisiacs. And another thing that that's leading to a lot of extinction is in Indonesia, they've got certain types of seahorses that are becoming extinct. And that's because the Chinese, they dry them, and again, they use them as either medicines or aphrodisiacs or something. And these Indonesian fishermen, they know that they're becoming extinct, but they're so desperately poor, they've got to feed their families, and the Chinese are offering them money to go and fish these seahorses. So they do it. They know that they're becoming extinct, but they'll go and pull them out of the sea because it's the only way they can earn some money to feed their families. So, yeah, it just shows you what a corrupt system capitalism is, because people know things are going extinct, but they're prepared to do that because they want money to feed their families. And of course, under socialism, we could all feed our families quite easily. So, that's all I've got to say.
Morgie, thanks for that, and forgive me. I don't know if I knew they were horns or tusks or whatever. Did I say tusks? I should have said horns. Forgive me. It's my education. It wasn't that great. You make some really, really good points. In fact, one of the points you made exactly is the same as the one I made about Spix's parrot, and that is, you know, the seahorses, of course, will be hunted to extinction because, by dint of the fact, the only way those fishermen can live is by hunting them to extinction, you know. And this is the sad thing that I think people don't, for some reason, don't seem to sort of grasp. And a bit worried about the aphrodisiac stuff. I don't know. Chinese people to me look quite similar, but maybe to each other they look ugly or something, which is why they need so much of this aphrodisiac stuff. The other thing you were talking about as well about problems and people thinking it was going to take a long time and so on. It's a fact that most people, the thing that upsets most people in their lives, if they want to complain about something, is litter. And litter rates higher on that than on the sort of list of complaints, if you like, than climate change. And that's because people see litter on their doorstep. It's a quick fix. So if a politician said, right, I'm going to fine every litterer, you know, a couple of thousand quid, but not do anything about climate change, he'd probably get the vote. Well, thanks for that, Moggy. Good points.
Okay, Howard, you take it there.
Hi. Can I mention somebody who you mentioned, Glenn? George Monbiot, known to many of us, long-standing campaigner for the environment and such things, long-standing critic of capitalism. You said you find sort of things he's saying these days hopeful. I'm afraid I find him a bit hopeless. He writes these articles and gives these talks which are very cogent criticisms of the absurdity of capitalism. True. And says he wants to get rid of capitalism. But when it comes to sort of detail, it's all sort of small changes in the system. It's all sort of being a bit fairer here and a bit fairer there. And, you know, has he ever heard of what we mean by socialism? I sort of doubt it. Or if he has, he's never given it a second thought. I mean, frankly, to a certain extent, he reminds me. I don't know if anybody here has been listening to the Reith lectures on Radio 4. They're being given by the former chair of the Bank of England, Mark Carney. And you'd say about Mark Carney, despite the fact that he was the head of the Bank of England, that he's heart in the right place in a way. And he's saying that we need to do this, that and the other in order to make the system fairer. And the presenter this week, forgotten her name, Anita Arnhem, asked the first question. And the question she asked was a very, very good one. She said, isn't what you're recommending just tinkering at the edges? And he didn't sort of give a satisfactory answer at all. But what I would say is, unfortunately, isn't that very much what people like Monbiot are doing, regardless of the fact they use sort of somewhat different language from someone like Mark Carney?
Well, I did say it was sort of he's still involved with Extinction Rebellion. And of course, you know, they are a reformist group, as we know. I haven't read him recently, Howard, in any detail. He wrote for The Guardian. I imagine he still does on occasions, but it would be interesting, actually, to sort of get in touch with him. I probably could, through a friend of mine, and introduce the party to him and put him on the spot. I'd be happy to do that, and I'd be happy to report back to you guys and say what response I got. And that would kind of put that one to rest. He'd either come back and say, God, I'd never heard of you guys. Yeah, I'm on board. Or he'll sort of come back with, you know, perhaps what you're suggesting, in as much as he'll sort of think like so many people, there's a kind of fairer form of capitalism, which is, I don't know, I mean, as it comes back to the what I said before, this sort of simple thing, it just, it isn't working. So why are we bothering? Why don't people learn from history and look back and think, well, it's never worked and it won't work? I think, it, you know, someone said this on last Friday, and that is, of course, it's working for some people. You know, it's working for those people that are in the position of, you know, commanding armies and to get what they want. You know, the idea now that a single human being, if they wanted to, could pay off a debt of an entire country, to me is obscene. But, you know, people go along with it. Maybe, you know, Monbiot goes along with the system in its, you know, he just wants it to be fairer, I guess.
Okay, Joel, go ahead, please.
Thanks for the talk, Glenn. It was very informative and well put together. It still shows us as socialists that obviously the media is quite strong, etc. And it just shows how much more we still got to do, because, as we've said, we're just not reaching the amount of people that we could do. And we know people like Extinction Rebellion get lots of publicity because of it's a single issue thing, and they do these sort of dynamic things. But as us and our companion parts throughout the world, I mean, it just shows how much more we still got to do. And it's and it just feels that what we're doing at the moment isn't enough. Thank you.
Thanks, Joel.
Right. And after Joel, that was Jink.
It was an interesting talk. It highlights what we all come across. Really, you know, I've had friends and I've tried to persuade them about socialism. And sometimes you get a hostile response if you say, you know, the wage slaves or whatever, you know. I think it is difficult to change society the way we want to, and it'll take a mass consciousness or whatever. But people just see the alternative as left or right or whatever. And some people vote Conservative because for selfish interest, and some people vote Labour for selfish interest, thinking they'll improve the lot of the workers and things like that. So it's up to us to expose the system, really. But one point about the system, it sort of has golden chains. There's a lot of people bought into it. You know, they've got their house. Okay, they've got a mortgage, but they've got a job that pays reasonably. So not everybody's a care worker on low wages. There are a lot of people on low wages. You've got people on zero-hour contracts. There's going to be a lot more redundancy after this COVID thing when the furlough scheme ends. So we can point out the ludicrousness of capitalism. But I've talked to friends and they say, oh, they'd prefer somewhere like Sweden or Denmark to Thatcher's Britain or you know, Tory Britain or whatever, you know, under Boris Johnson. So, I mean, I think we've got a lot of work to do to put ourselves forward as putting forward something that could work, really, you know. Because most people just see the choice between left and right, really.
Doug, thanks for that. Really interesting turn of phrase that. I haven't heard that before, but golden chains. It's I don't know if any other members are familiar with it, but it's a really good expression, and it really does sum up, you know, I guess one of the things I mentioned earlier, and that is the ability of a system to hold people just where it wants. So if they, you know, if they've aspired to buy a new car and the make they want, and they bought into the advertising, and they see themselves on sort of twisty mountain roads with their new car, and they've got a new widescreen TV, and you know, they've just got another tuppence halfpenny in their wage packets, they kind of got enough, you know, food and circus. They've got enough just to keep them happy, and they feel that they've made it, in inverted commas. So that's a really good point, Doug, and great expression. I haven't heard of that before. That really does make that sum it up.
Right. Next one is Nick.
Yeah, thank you, Glenn. Very interesting talk. There's a lot of points there. So there were a couple of things I wanted to say. I could always come back rather than go through a list. But one of the things that you mentioned, I think it was in slide 3, about potential problems or issues with identifying or at least announcing the fact that we are of socialist or socialist bent, have socialist ideals as being potentially that would perhaps put people off. Or but I mean, if you look back at before Corbyn was elected to the Labour Party, I mean, the Labour Party were able to attract hundreds of thousands, I think, 400,000 new members. And most of those members were young people. I mean, obviously, in the end, the promises didn't come to fruition, but they didn't seem to worry too much about identifying themselves as socialists. I'm not saying that Corbyn was a socialist, but most people would look at him and look at the left side of the Labour Party as socialist, even though they're just social democrats. So maybe we shouldn't be too worried about that. There's a couple of other things as well. The media tend to have such a massive influence on public opinion, and it's almost brainwashing now. Almost all the media, even The Guardian to some degree, which is probably one of the only kind of leftish papers in the the mainstream media, are all supporting, capitalist ideology and kind of brainwashing people. So, I mean, that's a real problem. I mean, I'm not sure how one addresses that other than supporting other media outlets that provide less biased views. And then just a third point was towards the end of the talk, you were talking about extending the dialogue with other groups. This is probably a bit of a contentious thing, I don't know. Is there some possibility of maybe having a dialogue with other parties on the left? I mean, I know we have considerable disagreements, particularly with people like the Leninist Trotskyist bent. But there are many other parties on the left. Is there any thoughts about how opening some dialogue? Is there any common ground?
Okay. Can you hear me, Nick?
That'll do for the time being. Okay, Glenn.
Yeah. Thank you, Nick. Well, a couple of things you mentioned there. Corbyn, and of course, was deemed as he was called a socialist in government when he was in government in a very insulting way as well. It's almost like used as a swear word. And you may recall when he was first in Parliament, he spoke very quietly. It didn't take him long to start shouting, but when he first started in Parliament, he was in Speaker's Question Time. He was Prime Minister's Question Time. He was speaking very quietly at that time. But then he kind of got drawn into the great sort of, animal den or whatever you call it, lion's den that is Parliament that we know. But they mentioned the name Labour and a socialist, and Labour called themselves socialists. This is my personal view. I'm absolutely not speaking for the party here, but I think the term, it feels, I will always agree entirely with socialist principles and what socialism is and what it stands for. But I can't help but be worried about the name, because I think it's like cutting off our nose to spite our face a bit. That's how I feel. Because why do we find it so difficult? We may understand what socialism means, and that's great. And we understand the true meaning of socialism, but this unmountable hurdle of almost everyone else You know, you've got to get over that bit of the argument, which takes a massive amount of doing before you even get them to engage with you. And when they still see it as a, you know, a different socialism, they'll think that what you're talking about is Russian socialism or Russian communism or Corbyn or whoever it is. And it's a massive hurdle. And the other problem, of course, with that is that if you are questioning people's you're questioning their own way of thinking. You're kind of saying to them, well, what you say is not right. And actually, you know, this is why I'd be interested to hear psychologists talk about this or psychiatrists. People really struggle with that. You know, if they feel they're having everything that they've stood for, everything that they believe kind of questioned or undermined, they really dig in. They dig into a trench and you really can't breach it sometimes. So the point I'm making is that, and this would be interesting to hear what other members' views are, that yes, we are socialists. Yes, that's what we believe in. But is that name helping us at the moment? If we want to get over that left-right wall that I was talking about, would it be sensible to adopt an entirely new definition of what we want to get to and give it a new name? I doubt very much whether this will meet with any agreement whatsoever, but it is one of the things that sticks in my head sometimes, because people are so keen to pick up a term they're familiar with, and they're far, far less keen to sort of look ahead if they feel that what they're thinking is being challenged. Whereas if you introduce something completely new to them, they're not being challenged. The other thing you mentioned, Nick, was the media. Well, I think, yeah, what you said is true. The extended dialogue you mentioned wasn't spoken of. I didn't mention that tonight. That was Wednesday, I think I said that, or the meeting before that. I was only saying, really, that I think it comes back to, you know, the fact that we always, I say we always, that's not strictly true, of course, but often, let's put it that way, we're talking between ourselves, and a lot of people that we you know, most of us agree with each other, so we're not gaining ground there. So what I was thinking is, not let's not just call in left wing groups, let's call in the conservatives, let's call in religious groups, let's call in all sorts of groups onto our discussion platforms, because and they don't need to be famous. Someone mentioned Nigel Farage. Well, actually, do we want people like that? Wouldn't it be better to have a human being? Doesn't have to be Nigel Farage. It could be Mrs. Miggins, who works at the bakery down the road. We only need to change one mind. That's all we do there. Now, if they're in positions of influence and they buy into it, okay, that's arguably a better position to be in if we want to change more minds. But I doubt if Farage would be likely to change people's minds in the way we want, whereas Mrs. Miggins might be. She might talk to enough friends that makes quite a difference. Anyway, thanks, Nick, for that.
Right, next is Robin.
Right, okay. All right, Glenn, well, thanks very much for a very interesting talk. I'll just be very brief and deal with your reference to work in a socialist society, you know, and the incentive to work. I've posted up two links under general chat, which I think people here might find of interest and use. The first one is a very lengthy study carried out by a researcher for the BBVA bank, Spanish bank, on the extent of unpaid work in the global economy. It gives a kind of profile of unpaid work and, you know, relevant data pertaining to that. And the second one is something about intrinsic motivation, you know, the intrinsic pleasure you get from work in itself, and how actually, despite the stereotype, the expectations, conventional expectations, money incentives undermine intrinsic motivation to work. And anyway, I've posted up a link to that as well, which I think people might find of interest. So it's useful to to read these and other links, because there's a hell of a lot of information out there of developments in capitalism today right under our nose, which substantiates what we're saying about work and other aspects of the socialist case. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say, really. But you'll find the two links I've posted under general chat. Okay? Thanks.
Thank you.
Right. We got Jordan again. Okay, Jordan.
Yeah, what's up? It was just a quick one. It kind of slipped my mind until Maggie and like a couple other people had mentioned it. But the reformist thing, that's an obvious one to do too. Like, it's kind of like a barrier. Like, even if you get through the whole like Lenin propaganda barrier and the whole like, I don't know, human nature barrier, like you still have, you know, even if people get to the idea of maybe socialism is a good thing, they get to the wrong idea of what socialism even is, you know? So that's another one that really sucks. But yeah, I agree with you guys on that.
Okay. Next on our list is Mike F. Thank you, Mike.
Hello there. Thanks very much, Glenn. That was very clear and very powerful. Yeah, I got a lot out of your talk. Yeah, thank you. And I'd like to emphasize the points you've made about the importance of psychology. And I think maybe this also sort of picks up on the links that Robin's just posted, although of course I haven't read them, but I think in order to understand why there are so few of us, you know, we need to address how people think and how the capitalist system makes people think. And I think to that end it's useful to put emphasis on alienation as a theme, and thinking of alienation as a sort of psychological condition caused by capitalism. And you know, of course, that manifests itself in lots of different ways. You know, people alienated from those they have to compete with on the labour market, alienated from the environment, alienated from the work that we do and the products of that work. And of course, all of that has psychological impacts on people, whether the more obvious ones, such as, you know, depression or stress, or the more subtle ones that people internalize, like you know, the feeling that we have to sort of know our place, you know, that there are limits as to what we can do, there's limits to our responsibilities or limits to our personal influence on the world. And I think our message would benefit from a psychological approach to examine alienation and how it impacts on people, on how people think. Also, as well, on a sort of different topic, but while it's in my head, I think that maybe one of the last things that sort of clicked with me when I developed my socialist mindset, I think, yeah, the last thing that clicked was the sort of the idea of a moneyless society, and that seems to be something which it is difficult to accept, you know, because obviously money dominates, you know, near enough every aspect of our lives, and it mediates how we interact with other jobs, other services, other people. And so, yeah, that's I remember that as being quite, you know, a jump I had to make. And of course, now, as Glenn says, you know, it seems perfectly obvious, you know, that a properly functioning society wouldn't need money and would be much better off without it. And again, I suppose that you know, sort of taps into what I was saying just now about understanding how people think, you know, and how people could make those leaps in the imagination, in our understanding, to go from a capitalist mindset into a socialist one. Yeah, thank you.
Now we have Adam. Okay, Adam.
Okay, I just wanted to say something about the term golden chains. It was actually used by Marx in Wage, Labour and Capital. I don't know whether he was the first person to use it, but he was talking about when capitalism is in a period of expansion with higher wages and you know, more employment. So anyway, so Marx can be given credit for that term. Thanks.
Oh, thanks for that, Adam. It shows that I haven't quite finished Das Kapital yet.
It's only Wage, Labour and Capital, which is a short pamphlet.
Okay.
Right. And I will just come back. Okay, Howard.
Thanks, Brian. I noticed that Moggy has excused herself. She says, I'm playing at the end of your function this lunchtime. In case some people here find that odd, not everybody may know that she's actually in New Zealand. So that's why she's approaching lunchtime. But the main thing I wanted to say was thanks to Robin for putting those links on the, where's he put them, on the general chat. I've had a quick look at them. I say a quick look because one of them is actually a link. I think it's a link to a 500-page book. So I've not read that yet. But there's a sort of summary, I think, underneath it, which is very good, actually. There's a little piece entitled Does Pay Motivate Volunteers? And there seems to be sort of convincing evidence that unpaid work is far more motivating than paid work. It's interesting a good sort of vindication of a part of our case. I recommend people look at that anyway.
Right, thank you, Robert. We've now got Paddy. Hello, Paddy. Take the platform.
Hiya. I wanted to just return briefly to something that Glenn said a bit ago about the thing that people are most bothered about is litter. And I thought that was quite interesting, probably true as well. But it struck me that people have got really quite narrow horizons that are partly self-imposed. They sort of confine themselves to what they know in their everyday life, generally speaking. It's a kind of division of labour that creates this kind of hyper focus on a single area of knowledge, and this goes right through how capitalism operates. It relies on division of labour, and it goes all the way up to at the other end of the scale, scientists who do exactly the same thing. I'm just actually next week going to be attending an online New Scientist event, and all participants were asked to provide a question that could be answered by the scientists present. So after some thought, the question that I put forward was, why can't science devise a better system than capitalism? Now, I'm fairly sure that question won't get picked, because every time I write a letter to New Scientist discussing capitalism, it usually doesn't get printed. The ones where I don't mention capitalism do get printed. So it seems to me that scientists are also just suffering from a kind of tunnel vision. So this goes right through society. And I was musing on this and thinking, well, what could we do about that? How do we challenge that? And then I suddenly realised that, well, for a whole section of society, we don't have to challenge that. Young people haven't developed this tunnel vision. This is something that people seem to grow into later. And I thought, well, you know, we could solve probably a lot of our problems if we make a conscious effort to target young people. I don't think this has been mentioned so far this evening. But the question of how to target young people, that's quite difficult, because I think we as a party don't know how to do that. Why? Well, because we're amateurs, and I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. I mean it in the original French sense. We love it. We love the subject. We love what we do. We're amateurs in that sense. But it also means that what we tend to do is produce the sort of publicity that appeals to us ourselves. So what you tend to have is a feedback loop. Just imagine you had a group of socialist train spotters for a minute. What they'll tend to do, without even realising, is they'll tend to fill their publicity with train references and track references and other cultural indicators that mean things to them. And then they'll end up and they'll wonder why it is that they only ever seem to attract other train spotters. And they seem to be fishing in a very small pond, and they're never able to grow really above replacement level. What they really need is a fresh eye. So when you come along to them and you say, well, look, what you've probably need is some marketing assistance, some marketing help. At that point, they'll go, nonsense, we've been doing perfectly well for 100 years. And anyway, we don't believe in capitalist marketing. So in a way, I wonder if that's part of the problem of why more people aren't socialists, is that we don't really know how to talk to young people, because lots of us aren't young people. We're sort of in a bit of a trap. This is something that's more recent, I think. It wasn't a problem, say, 30 years ago, when there were quite a lot of young people in the party, 40 years ago. But we seem to have got ourselves into a bit of a trap now, and we're not quite sure how to get out of it. That's why I'm one of those people in the party who thinks that we probably would be quite well advised to go and get some outside advice on this question. Thank you.
I thought that was really interesting what you said, Paddy. I was at some point early this evening, I was almost thinking of suggesting that we contacted an ad agency or something, but I didn't say it because I thought, well, pretty much I'd get the response that, you already alluded to. But I think you're right. I mean, I think, the way, as older people, the way we communicate and the sort of perception we have of how communication takes place is probably totally dated, really. And, if the Socialist Party hired a couple of young guys who could sort of say, well, I can set the world on fire with what you're saying, just give me the computer and the money and I'll do it, it'd be worth doing, I think.
Okay, and Nick again.
Yeah, just to follow on really from what Paddy and Glenn have just said, I think it'd be a good idea to encourage more younger people into the party. I mean, as an example, my daughter, who's 28, she doesn't know anything about Karl Marx. I'm trying to get her interested. And she said to me that she wouldn't be frightened to be identified as someone who reads Karl Marx. And she looked at me in bemusement because I said to her that, that's a possibility, that you'd be, the reaction to people is generally negative. But it's interesting, a lot of young people don't seem to have that view. And my nephew's the same. He's 22, he's an apprentice plumber, and he's a socialist, and he's quite interested in Karl Marx, but he's not actually a member of the party. He's actually still a member of the Labour Party. But I think it's important, and we should be looking at trying to attract, some of the younger people.
Right. And now we've got Vin.
Yeah, hi. I mean, this marketing question comes up from time to time. I've worked in marketing for, I suppose, on and off. I've done 3 or 4 years, not a right lot. But when people say that, I kind of think, what are you going to get from marketing? I think it's, you'll talk to people in marketing and they'll ask sort of straightforward things. What are your goals? And really, it's going to be a little bit like going to see, a clairvoyant. You'll really just be fed back, your own questions in a nice glossy brochure. But the difference is that when you see Mrs. Petrulengo, it's easy for me to say, when you see a clairvoyant on Blackpool Pier, you know, you cross the palm with silver. But, you know, when you go and see a marketing company, I mean, what was that? 20 years ago, I was being charged out at 1,200 quid a day. So, you know, I think you need to find out a little bit more about marketing before, you know, you consider going for it. I'm afraid I don't like sort of like coming out with stuff where I'm just saying, you know, this isn't the answer without providing the answer. But, you know, you've got to think hard before you start paying loads of money to marketing companies.
You want to come back on that, Glenn?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's out of my territory, and I'm sure Vin knows vastly more about it. Well, he obviously does than I do. But I think rather than a glossy brochure with, you know, what the party's about, I would have thought more would the better outcome of marketing, for want of a better word, would be trying to get channels exploited that so people could discover the party more easily than perhaps they do now. And coming back to Paddy's train spotter point, which was very well made, if people are looking for socialism, they'll find it, and they may or may not want to then, you know, get involved or look at the details of the ideologies. But better would be to reach people who hadn't thought of Googling it or whatever, if you see what I mean. In other words, we're not making a glossy brochure about ourselves. We're trying to exploit more, dare I say it, modern or up-to-date channels to get the message to people somehow. And, you know, marketing companies do this all the time with their sort of various means of seeing what people are interested in and so on. So I don't know. I don't know enough about it, of course. I don't know anything about it, but I'm pretty sure we should be reaching more young people, as Paddy said.
Right. We got Mike Foster again.
Thanks. Yeah. On the marketing question, I think that was thrown out at the recent ADM. Unfortunately, in my view, I thought that would be worth. I thought the idea would be worth pursuing. I think there was quite a lot of opposition to the idea, and that means that, you know, we'd have to sort of do it ourselves for the foreseeable future. And of course, before you sort of start rebranding or remarketing, you need to do a bit of market research. And I think that's something that we should do among those who we haven't had any contact with before. Off the top of my head, one way that could be done would be to put together a survey, maybe just asking some quite general questions about how people feel about their place in society, how much influence they feel they have, what their views are on change. Quite general questions, and you know, and we could be quite upfront about who it is that's putting the survey together, and maybe spreading that through, you know, Facebook or Twitter, where it would have contact with, you know, sort of friends on Facebook who, you know, might be distant relatives or someone we once went to school with, but would at least have the opportunity to fill in the survey if they wanted, or you know, probably other ways of disseminating such a survey as well. But I think that might be an idea to try and ask questions more of people who we don't know, who we haven't had any contact with, whether or not they're aligned to any particular political movement or ideology. I think that would be worth pursuing and should be done before we look into any possible marketing strategies, because, you know, the results of that would inform whatever those strategies might be.
Okay. John, come in now.
Yes, I think people need time to get used to new ideas. I mean, sometimes it can take hundreds of years. Look at poor Galileo. It took quite some time. Being right is no guarantee of immediate success or even immediate recognition in any way, shape or form. Knowledge is quite fragmented, and many workers understand certain aspects of capitalism quite well. But they just don't seem to join it all up. And, of course, they're discouraged from doing so. by all sorts of parts of capitalism, the so-called education system. We're all familiar with the sort of things that stand in the way. So it's a very difficult thing to disseminate new ideas throughout society at any time. That I think history shows us that. The T-junction analogy that was discussed earlier, I think obviously a T-junction, there is no road ahead. And I think what we are trying to do is break that wall or break that barrier and start building a new road ahead. I think that's something we would say. As for trying to get young people, well, since I was 15, I've been trying to get young people to engage with these ideas. And now, 50 years later, I still think young people are the solution because they're going to be here when we are not, that's for sure. So that's quite an obvious thing to say. But now, apparently, we can't, old people can't talk to young people. So that's unfortunate if that's what we think. I knew 50 years ago that in 50 years' time, I wouldn't see socialism. But I didn't expect that... the Socialist Party would not be a lot bigger than it is, has turned out to be. In fact, it's smaller than it was when I joined. So that's an unfortunate thing. But it's very difficult to come up with one answer or one great idea as to what we could do that would change all of this. And I don't think it's down solely to us. The new name for socialism, for example, that was mentioned. Well, socialism, although it's not quite the hate word that it is in the United States, it's still a bit suspect. And anybody that starts blethering on about socialism, capitalism, and other sorts of political-sounding words, right away people think, uh-oh, nutter, better watch this person. Even words like activist have got bad connotations in this society. And there's obvious reasons for that. We have a gutter press that likes to stir up as much ignorance as it possibly can. So if we changed the name, the word socialism, and called it something else, the same problem would arise that our employers have with the word problem. In my workplace, the word problem, and probably in most others, the word problem has been more or less banished. And you can't even mention the word problem without people getting ridiculously upset. So we don't have problems, we have challenges and opportunities, and even worse, turning challenges into opportunities. That's the sort of nonsense that's talked. So all that happens is that we all laugh as soon as they mention challenges. We all sneer and laugh. That's become the new hate word, just like if we substituted another word for socialism. It too would become at least a suspect word, if not a hate word. So it's all very difficult. And I think we just have to persevere and, of course, try to find some way of attracting young people. But there's no quick and easy answer. Thanks.
Thanks for that, John. It's interesting you were saying this party's got smaller. I mean, I suppose that's one of the main reasons that I was hoping to sort of... look at some of these issues today, because that's just not what we want. You know, the end result of that, it gets smaller and smaller, and then it doesn't exist anymore. I'm wondering, you know, as we all talk amongst each other again, I still come back to the same thought that, you know, are we, just because we share a view doesn't give us the sort of qualifications to be able to answer a lot of the questions that we've been asking this evening. I think it would be interesting to sort of somehow engage with someone who can take an outside look at what, you know, what the party stands for, what it, you know, the way it operates in terms of recruiting members and so on, all these things, and perhaps give us some expert advice. I mean, I do know that in certain walks of life, if I wanted some advice about my health, say, I don't try and guess what it is myself. I go to someone who hopefully has got an answer for me, you know, and can tell me what to do about it. So I don't know, it could be the parties discussed this thing, this sort of stuff before, but I'd certainly be interested to know from Mike why the idea of approaching a marketing, whoever it was, company was rejected. But I'm not so much thinking of that right now, though. I would be interested to know the answer to that. I'm thinking more of someone who can give us an answer, if you like, or at least a view, an educated view on why we are where we are, and we have effectively a declining membership from what I'm hearing. Thanks.
Right. We've got Freddie now. Now, Freddie.
Yes, thanks, Comrade. First of all, to you, Glenn. Very interesting address you give. I have to say, I'm not of an age where I'm over-familiar or even have a great enthusiasm for things like Facebook and such like. But when we're talking about marketing and perhaps taking on some professional organisation to do something like that, I have to say at this stage, I'm not wholly persuaded by that idea. And it's not the first time that idea has come along. And certainly, yes, it has been rejected before. But as I say, I'm not wholly persuaded at this stage. That's not to say that I couldn't be. But to try to get back to this point about marketing, we do to ourselves sometimes the degree of marketing, I think, in terms of certainly advertising and the like the homeless magazines, etc. We've done stuff there. We've advertised, I believe it was in The Guardian at one time, also used to regularly place adverts there. Now, we have a Twitter account as far as I know, when I've been reading some of the stuff, and we have Facebook. And there seems to be quite a large following on places like Facebook and Twitter and such like. They don't seem to be materializing, certainly in terms of becoming actual members. That's not to say that, you know, some of them aren't socialists. May well be. Maybe they just do not want to get into the party to that extent. But when you look at people who, for example, are voting in elections and voting for us, there was 90 odd apparently, a couple of years ago, I think it was Howard that mentioned it in his article, where we got people there voting for us. But to get back to this question of the marketing, does anybody do any of the analysis on the Twitter and Facebook that we have and seek to see where that can be exploited as to why, if we've got several thousand people hitting the SPGV website, there must be some interest there somewhere. Thank you.
Thanks, Freddie. You want to come back on that, Glenn? You don't have to.
Just briefly. Thanks, Freddie. I mean, I'm really a technophobe. I don't get involved with Facebook or Twitter at all, ever. But I would imagine that these are, in current circumstances, very good vehicles for putting over the socialist case. But I would really not be well placed to even comment on it, to be honest with you. I'm sure there's a member who would be far better placed to suggest whether that could be used in a better or more effective way.
It was Paddy I was thinking of.
Right, you are. We got Richard now. Had all yours.
Every time I hear this word marketing, I'm afraid my heart sinks. And I kind of think, I shudder to think what a marketing company would try to do with the party case. For me personally, marketing is not what we want. What we want is engagement. And if we want to get young people, you've got to get onto YouTube and Vimeo, because that's where they're all at. That's where they go. Facebook is, you mentioned Facebook to a 20 year old and they were laughing in your face. Facebook is really seriously all that. It's actually on YouTube where you want to go, and on those other video platforms. And Steve might want to say something about this, because that's at the moment what we're trying to do. And that is to try and put some, videos together, which we can actually and have a YouTube platform, a YouTube page where we can put up videos about the party things. And I would like to go much further than that. But at the moment, I'm feeling a bit guilty because I'm supposed to be doing something, but I've got winter blues at the moment, so I'm having enough trouble working up the energy to do the washing up at the moment. So I feel a bit like a bit of a hypocrite saying this, but that's really what I, the way we want to be going. The other thing I'd like to say is to really thank Glenn for that particular talk. I know a lot of what you had to say, Glenn, was kind of quite depressing in itself, you know, in the way it was actually going and everything. But the sense of commitment and enthusiasm that you brought forward to it has really kind of cheered me up in ways that about socialism in the way that I haven't been for a long time. And I don't know about other people, but I think that I certainly feel a bit depressed about the way things are going and find it very difficult to work up the energy for things at the moment. So thanks for that, Glenn. That was really kind of a shot in the arm. Cheers.
Well, I really feel I've got to thank you too. Thank you very much for that. That's very kind of you to say so.
Hi, there's no end to it tonight. Hey, John coming back on again. Thank you, John.
Yes, just on the question of the social media, so-called, that's being used, I too find Facebook very suspect. It's full of superficialities and trivia and that allows people to just remain in their own bubble. That could be said to a certain extent about YouTube, but I think YouTube could be more promising in that we could attract people who were more genuinely interested, had a better attention span than many of the people that appear on Facebook and other things like Twitter and whatnot. For example, there's some atheists in the United States who actually they're a little community in Texas, and they're a bit like a church, except they're atheists, and they help people that were formerly church members to get out of survivors, you might say, of religious superstition. They help them to come to terms with it, and they also invite Christians and so on to come on and tell them why they believe what they believe. And if we could do something like that for socialism, we would perhaps achieve something. Not maybe the revolution in our lifetime, but maybe something more than we currently do. Thanks.
Can I come back on that briefly and certainly echo what Richard said? And in as much as my own daughter doesn't go near Facebook anymore, I think it's totally outdated, so I'm told. I've never done it, but I think YouTube is the answer. And I think there are other forms of communication as well. But can I also ask, forgive me for not knowing this, but is the party putting together some YouTube videos, and who's taking part, and what's that all about? I'd love to know.
As far as I know, Glenn, there's no YouTube down on the cards as yet. It is talked about, but when it gets off the ground is another thing.
We've got four scripts ready. Sorry, I'll answer that, as Steve doesn't seem to be responding to this. Steve has been kind of spearheading this. But yeah, there's four scripts. We're hoping for more, and we're hoping to get six is ideal, six YouTubes on different aspects of the party case, and ultimately to get a YouTube platform. It's like a page which shows all our YouTube videos, a YouTube page. And try and get that up and running. That's slowed down a little bit recently, but it's still moving. And we hope to get that going. But Steve is the person to talk to, Glenn, if you're interested.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Brian, can I come in now? Can I jump over, Vincent?
Yeah, sure, mate.
Okay, thanks, Vin. We're in the process of preparing scripts to go onto YouTube, and as Richard said, we've got four in more or less in a finished state. I'm expecting another one next week from Comrade Keith Graham, but so if anybody is in coming helping out.
we're looking for 5-minute scripts or something along those lines. So we're certainly looking for any other volunteers. We don't necessarily need to restrict it to 6. The more the bloody merrier, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm hoping that we're going to have a technical meeting to progress beyond the script stage over possibly the last week of this month.
Okay, thanks for that, Steve. Vin now. Vincent, you was.
Yeah, okay. What Mike said about market research, actually, I think that is something we should think about. And one suggestion that I've got is I know nothing about websites, but I do know I occasionally come off a website and a window comes up saying, before you go, you know, and then ask a few questions. And I think if we could do that, that might be useful. Just to say something like, where did you hear of the party? Did you find what you're looking for? Have you got any questions that we should think of addressing? Not more than anything that's going to take someone more than a minute, because if it is a long thing, you know, if I've got to put much of an effort in, I just get bored and close the thing down. But I think that might be just a quick solution of getting a bit more. Something else I'd say, yes, when people say about, can we talk to younger people? I mean, my daughter doesn't talk to me, but, you know, she talks to my mum, who's 95, and they seem to have a lot of rapport. So I wouldn't discount the possibilities of intergenerational communication. Okay, over and out.
Right. Going well, the conversation tonight, I've got to be honest. Right, next on the list is Joel. Hello, Joel.
Hi, Brian. Just to say I'm one of the people involved with these video scripts. Just to sort of keep people informed, basically. And, the survey thing, it'd be good to find out people's views, basically. And as Mike said, keep it short and sweet so they don't switch off when they're doing the survey. Thank you.
Joel, can I just ask you, with the videos, is it a sort of talking head thing? Is it someone speaking to the video for YouTube? Is that what's happening there?
Well, that's the idea at the moment. I mean, obviously, if people have got other ideas of how we can present scripts, I mean, we're certainly open to all of that. But that is one option, yeah.
I just had a brief thought. I don't know if it would be possible or easy to do, but someone have already said that, you know, most of us are cracking on a bit. I mean, and whereas, you know, arguably some of us may have some gravitas in delivering that sort of thing, is it possible that we can get a young person to deliver the script?
Well, that was the first, when we got together, that was, I think, the first thing we mentioned, get some youngsters in instead of us sort of elder states people.
but
that was the first we mentioned youth presenting it. Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Joel.
Okay.
Right. Seems we've got a bit of a break, yeah. That being the case, I've got about four comments, not really questions you're willing to put forward. The first one is the question, naturally selfish. It does apply to the human species, but only in certain conditions. Becoming naturally selfish only appears when there's a perception of scarcity, like you mentioned during the drought that we had in 1976, very hot summer, and they putting out the water. Well, the water thing straight off the main, shut down your water and you're going to take it off the main. Things, you know, at first things did go know, people were stocking up water whichever way they could, but it seems that they're done. The contemporary example we've got of that is what occurred during the pandemic. Right? People went naturally selfish and they absolutely raided supermarkets. But once they realized, it took a couple of weeks, right? But once they realized that the scarcity was only their imagination at work, right? And the stocks were getting reshelved and the shelves were getting restocked as quick as possible, right? We haven't had much of a reoccurrence of that now. Right. Now, Moneybot. Yes, Moneybot is putting out that he's advocating change.
Brian, sorry, can I interrupt you a minute? You're doing something in the background that's really noisy, and it's really disruptive. Or it's coming from Joel, who's not muted. Somebody's making a lot of noise. Is it not? Okay. Oh. Okay. Oh, that sounds all right now. Sorry. Yeah, carry on.
Monobo, yes, he does advocate change, but he doesn't advocate what sort of change other than responsibility given to the general public, etc., and they being in command of certain issues. He certainly doesn't advocate socialism, right? And I suspect that he is well aware of the party. There is no harm in approaching him again. I mean, if we can get him in a debate on you, great, right? The individual, you mentioned that that you've come across adverse comments when approaching the individual, especially when you're undermining their belief system, right? Yes, you'll get that, but what we've found from experiences with the stall that we've had in Cardiff is that when you speak at them, you will get this adverse reaction. But when you speak with a member of the public, member of the working class, right, speaking from their position and from their perception and with empathy and all the rest of it, right, you won't get this adverse reaction. And then finally, how do we progress to socialism? Well, one way of doing it is by undermining the strengths that we talked about of capitalism, right? If we get in there and dig deeper and make it the strengths look ridiculous, right? We're halfway there. That's all.
Thank you for that. I must admit, Brian, I was really struggling picking all that up. There's an awful lot of sort of distortion and noise, but thank you. I see, and thanks for the comments. I think I've deciphered most of it, but there was a lot of background noise. I couldn't figure out what it was.
I think it might be Brian holding his microphone. It doesn't sound like anything at your end, Brian, but it creates a lot of noise across the channel.
I've just found out what the cause was. A cable was wrapped around my mic, and every time I was moving my head, I'd move my mouth. Right, the cable was moving and brushing up against the mic itself.
That sounds
sorry
like
about
it.
It sounds to me like we're sort of draw to a close now. I don't know what you think, Paddy, but it seems to have exhausted anything. I'd be happy to sort of anyone email me if they've got any further thoughts. If you want to draw a close to it, I don't know.
I think there's a couple of questions in the still in the queue, though.
Okay.
No, we've all got them. We've got all of them. We've covered the queue. Speaking queue is done.
You've not?
No, Joel's just put one on. And Freddie has.
And I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had Freddie. Richard. Right. Richard? Oh, well, anyway.
No, you haven't.
Okay, then. Richard's next, then.
I wasn't going to say much because you said most of what I was going to say. I was going to say that one thing that always cheers me up is that there have been studies of what happens in when there are disasters anywhere around the world, and almost universally people act in extremely unselfish ways. But more than that, they abandon concepts of property, that under circumstances of that kind, property ceases to be an issue or ceases to be a major issue between people. And I think that's really something that I hang on to as an idea when these issues come up about, you know, are human beings selfish? But anyway, that's all I was going to say.
Right. Next, then, is Joel. Joel.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, it's just a couple of points. I don't know if I misheard you. Did you say something about overstressing our strength or something to the media? I might have misheard you. You made some points a few moments ago.
No, what I said was undermining the strengths of capitalism.
All right.
It was brought up in a slideshow. Right? Capitalism sustains itself by its strengths, and people take this on board. What are the strengths of capitalism? What we need to do in order to gain socialists is undermine these strengths, figure out what they are, right, and list them down. You know, do a questionnaire. There's been talk of a questionnaire tonight, right? And, you know, get stuck in and undermine them. That's it.
And, yeah, and also with the pandemic as well, I mean, there's been so many examples of people just helping each other, helping the neighbours or people in the street, just whether it's doing shopping for them or just making sure people are okay. So, I mean, well, it's not just over here. It's around the world. There's been so many examples of people helping each other.
Yeah, that's a fine example, Joel.
Thank you.
Right, next is Mike Brown.
Yeah, sorry for the delay. Something was mentioned earlier on tonight, which I could hear about 50% of, was we should be looking at the ideas to young people. Well, I had that in mind, Fan, a few years ago. I proposed that we look at rewording the Declaration of Principles 1904 language into modern-day language so that it could be translated into other languages around the world rather than English. And I remember handing out an image of how many languages there are in the world, how many people speak them, and English is about one-tenth of that. But the idea went down like a lead balloon, but it would be good to look at the language and try and put it into modern words so that modern people living now, the 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 16, 19-year-olds, can understand it. That might be worth looking at because people will come up with some new ways of wording what we're about.
Right, thanks for that, Mike. Right, the time now is 9:30. Oh, thereabouts. No, it's in fact, it's 36 minutes to 10. I got Freddie and John in the speaking queue. I'm not taking any further questions after we dealt with Freddie and John. Last two questions. Thank you very much, Freddie.
Yeah, thank you, comrade. Just to make at the beginning of the speech or of the address earlier tonight, Glenn made the point that at the top of when he was searching the web or whatever, that the Socialist Party came out on top. I think, first of all, that might be the old militant tendency. Somebody might have mentioned that earlier on when I went to the toilet or whatever, but I think that's the old militant tendency that you're talking about. But to clarify just really, the question I was talking about, I don't use Facebook, never have done, I can never see me using it, but I do look at times what is on, say, the party website, and what I believe to be the case, the Socialist Party, in other words, the old militant tendency, they have a YouTube page. And it looks to me, because I'm actually looking at it just now, that the party already has a YouTube page. And from what I'm reading up on it, is that there are nearly 400 subscribers to that. It says the SPGB 1904. Is that not an official YouTube page that we have? I know that's not just directly you, Glenn. I appreciate that. But we're talking about YouTube, and yet we seem to have something already there on that with nearly 400 subscribers to it and some videos already being uploaded to it. Is that the case?
Yes.
I think you'll find, Freddie, that's an old YouTube going back to the, might be going back to the European election. Right, anyway, last and final question from John. John, come
in. Right, it's not really a question as much as just a comment, and it'd be fairly brief. It's with respect to what was mentioned about the object and declaration of principles. And putting it into more modern language, does the standard not have in every issue a thing called introducing the Socialist Party or what we're about? And that puts it into more modern language. I have to say that I don't think young people would have that much difficulty in understanding the object and declaration of principles. 50 years ago, that was by no means modern language, and I had no difficulty whatever, and nobody that I knew had any difficulty whatever in understanding it. It's a wee bit particular kind of use of language, but it's not that remote from modern usage. And as I say, if we have other articles or introductory pieces round about it, I don't think there should be a problem with it. The things are complementary. That's all. Thanks.
Right, thanks for that. Right, I'm bringing the meeting to a close now. I want to thank Glenn for a great contribution, and also everybody to put in a query. Very good. Like Freddie said, enjoyable night. Cool. Next one is Wednesday, the chat, and hope to see you then.
Thanks,
take
Brian.
Care, everybody.
Thanks,
take
Brian.
Care.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for joining, Brian.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. Well done.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.